Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hello friends, how are you? I hope this finds you in good health and secure. You know by now if you've watched any amount, and by the way, if you're new here, welcome. Thank you for being here. This is a huge resource, not just in videos, but website and e-books and a bookstore and a proper mandala store and a free podcast, lots of free information on the website. So please check out the links in the description and get to know this resource. It's all about building your confidence and security and removing doubts about your practice. Okay? I ask all the time to have you give me your comments or email me if you have questions about the way I've described something, if it's not been in-depth enough. You know, words, language is funny. And sometimes we think we know exactly with certitude what we've said, and the way it's heard depends on the ears that are hearing it, the sentient mind that's hearing it, and their life experience. And those same exact words may have really sometimes very divergent meanings. And they'll be just as sure that they've heard what you've said, but they've only heard clues about what you've said, and they arrange those thoughts in their own experience, and there's this, right, this transmigration, if you will, of ideas and thoughts and impressions with personal experience. So I talk about that a lot on this channel because we deal with that when we study Buddhism. The various authors, transcribers, academics, researchers, many of whom are specifically not Buddhists. So why would they deeply understand the words they're translating? Isn't that odd? Doesn't that seem like an obvious one? Anyway, we deal with it every day in our own relationships. Even I think sometimes when we listen to ourselves in our little private conversations in our minds, right? Anyway, I say all this because I like to answer your questions. And oftentimes in these videos, again, if you're new here, you don't know this, but if you watched any amount of videos on this channel, you'll notice that I start out almost every video when I'm talking about whether it's a gosho or a translation of a sutra, with some kind of anecdote. And generally speaking, those anecdotes are inspired by your questions. So they get answered in the course of time throughout several videos. But sometimes I get several questions on different topics that aren't necessarily related to the current series of videos I'm making. And I decide, well, I guess it's time to do a Q&A. And this is one of those. So there's been a few topics that have come up. I'm not sure I'll hit them all. The three that are on my mind right now is free will, chanting for peace in the world, what some of you may know as Kozen Rufu, or world peace, or what is the objective of Buddhism, ultimately, what is that about? I thought we were just trying to enlighten ourselves, that kind of thing. And an interesting one that I haven't heard in a long time, and this goes to you who've been practicing, most of us, when we when we come to this Lotus Sutra Buddhism, we've generally looked around a bit, right? I mean, I was all over the map. I was born a Roman Catholic in French Canada, right? In Quebec, Canada. But very early on, I was around a lot of martial arts practitioners, judo practitioners, and I learned a lot about different things from the Japanese at first, and then later I got into other branches of martial arts and the Chinese ideas, and I really started to, and even on television in Canada at the time, there was a lot of conversation in the 60s about mind over matter, and you know, how influential our thoughts are, and So at a very young age, I was wandering, right? I studied Kabbalah. I studied or Kabbalah, Kabbalah. I've heard it said many different ways, but Kabbalah, yeah. Anyway, I don't want to list every single thing I've looked at, but I went hither and yon, okay, into many things. And Buddhism, although I'd heard of it and even in a way studied it because of the Asians I was around and their insights into the world at large, I didn't really formalize that study until into my, well, how old was I? Anyway, it was into the late 70s and into the 80s. And then in the 80s, I got really into it, started reading a lot, and then I took my vows. And yeah, I've been studying this a long time. So all of that is to say, not, wonderful Sylvain, you know so much. believe me, that's not it. Just that I have a breadth of experience, and I think that most of you, if not all, have had similar paths. Whether you've dug into it, I'm a learned scholar, isn't the point. The point is, there's always a searching for, there's got to be something that anchors me to what's going on here. Because oftentimes, as Gurdjieff said in The Fourth Way, we simply plummet through life. We're just sleepwalking through it. We think we're awake, but we're just waiting for things to happen so that we can react to those things. And to the degree we think we're successful or not with how we reacted, well, that's a good life. And as Buddhists, if you've practiced for any amount of time, that's kind of pathetic, isn't it? But isn't that where most people are? Not because we're stupid, but because that's where samsaric kind of leaves you. The samsaric mind is born of, all right, using Buddhist rhetoric now, is born of this physical codependence, right? Dependent origination. It's built into the stuff that's responsible for building DNA. So it's not just in our DNA, it's well deeper than DNA. It's what makes the DNA, the codependent relationship, right? Dependent origination. Look at the nindana. Look at the nine consciousnesses. Look at the way, if you have a copy of Buddhism Reference, Volume 1, it doesn't say Volume 1, but it is Volume 1. I'm working on Volume 2, which is the only reason it now is Volume 1. But if you have a copy of that, whether it's an ebook or a print book, look up the engine of life. That's, I talk about it all the time. Yeah. Anyway, so these questions arise, and I think they're really good questions. This question comes from earlier practices. They could be from Yogacara, they could be from New Age. Different schools pop up everywhere because everyone has a new understanding, and then they create a whole philosophy around it, right? But this actually comes from early Buddhism. In the early days of getting people to understand how their body and mind work and how they work together, how they influence one another, Shakyamuni had a major task ahead of him. He was talking and teaching people who had been for centuries, culturally, I mean, brought up into very magical, mystical ideas of how life works, right? He changed the whole definition of karma, turned it on its head. He did a lot of things like that that really angered a lot of people because he took away their control and mostly befuddled many people. But enough people thought there's something to what he's saying, that he started this whole movement of Buddhism, yeah? Anyway, in those early teachings, he was simply teaching how to, at that time, and some people still today, meditate, watching the breath go in and out. Even there are forms of Qigong in China that are based on moving the tongue and creating a circuit of the breath going in and following meridians and pathways through the body into the Dantian, the repository of Qi, and back out to cleanse the area of the brain, the pituitary area, and that area of the brain to cleanse the mind, and exit through the forehead, and yeah, all the cliches, and expiate whatever is not life-affirming while re-energizing and collecting energy in the body, the bioelectric force, the chi, yeah? Yeah, there's a lot. Ooh, yeah, read some books on that. There are many rabbit holes. But there's a certain amount of clarity, as this one email was telling me, experienced from that practice of watching the breath, calming the mind. You can never stop the mind working. Some people, they misunderstand the calming of the mind. Isn't it turning off of the mind? But the comparison was made, the question was posed, how does that practice, which you can achieve many seeming benefits from that practice, how does that compare to chanting the Daimoku, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, right? Well, you can look this up in the book, Buddhism Reference. You can look this up on the website, threefoldlotus.com. There's one of 100 buttons there, more than 100 probably, on how does chanting work. I have a little document you can read there. But first of all, I want to reiterate that this is an early teaching of Buddhism. And if you understand how Buddhism was taught in levels, building on previous teachings, leading to the ultimate teaching of the Lotus Sutra, the breathing part of meditation and the mind is incorporated into chanting. When we endeavor to chant rhythmically at a consistent pace, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, Namo Renge Kyo, Namo Myoho Renge, right? We're very conscious, with part of our consciousness, on regulating our breathing. It comes into better regulatory fashion, very controlled, without much effort, as we go on. And so understand that chanting does many, many, many more things than simply control the breath. I'm not saying controlling the breath is simple. What I'm saying is if you achieve benefit from that practice of breathing, please understand that as you sit, comfortable but attentive position, right? The body, the focus of the mandala, much better than just wandering around with closed eyes, thinking about the self, the samsaric self and the breath. See, that's still anchored in samsara. That's the limitation of that meditation. We think we're going everywhere because we're working with the mind, but that's the samsaric mind. When we chant, we exit that mind with the help of our tool, that mandala, and we focus on the myoho, the potential and the instantiation of every thought moment. And so as we do that, we exit the samsaric mind and transpose ourselves, transmigrate, if you will, transcend into the Buddha mind through that gateway, the Gohonzon mind, that gateway, that door. When we do that, we now invoke a nature, a powerful transcendental means of observing, not shutting down, but observing the entire world, the engine of the universe, as it's happening, moment to moment to moment to moment, the cycle, right? This is something breathing meditation can never accomplish because it's in samsara. Now, the fascinating tool about chanting is its relationship with the focal point and the slingshot, if you will, or the boomerang of going back into the mind to explore its greater potential. Well, the physical act of chanting, the regularity, the consciousness of the repetition of the characters so we don't slow, right? Got to be clear, got to say it well, got to keep the rhythm. We occupy that samsaric mind. We give it something to do. And we take samsara and we put it to task because that's what samsara does so well, right? Samsara mind is constantly data pointing, identifying. So now we're saying, well, if you're going to data point at this daimoku. Identify with this daimoku. Oh, identify the daimoku. What are we doing? We're invoking a different state of mind. What a powerful task to put our samsaric mind to. That is what helps us penetrate this potential instantiation business so that we can open our Gohonzon mind and experience Buddha. And so the breathing, it just happens. The wandering mind gets put to task. And so now the only thing left is instantiate Buddha. Instantiate. What does Nichiren say? Single-mindedly meet Buddha. That's what this is what we're doing. So yeah, there is a relationship between the breathing meditation of very early teachings and the fully evolved method of self-enlightenment. So I hope that that was enough of an answer. And you know, you can pursue more by going to threefoldlotus.com, seeing those different buttons on Myoho Renge Kyo, what this chanting, how does it work, what is not. There are all kinds of buttons. These questions have been amassing on that website since the 90s. They're typical questions. And, you know, it's funny. Sometimes the most typical questions we don't remember are typical questions. So there's always room for more to add to those links. So let me know. And in fact, you've heard me. One more word on chanting. Meditation. It is a meditation, but it's what I would say, what I would call active meditation. We interact with the potential of the mind rather than just sitting in it, which is samsaric. Okay? Next one, chanting for peace. This question comes up in different forms. It has for many years now. This format that I've adopted for this channel is admittedly somewhat one-sided. I'm very involved with reading your emails and your comments. And I, in fact, try to tailor what I talk about to the interest you seem to have. What videos do you watch? What questions do you ask? And right now, I've kind of dedicated myself after this last year, especially that I've wandered around through several sutras on this channel. But the Lotus Sutra seems to have the bulk of the questions that everybody wants to know about, especially since there's so much misinformation out there by all these different sects and private groups and manipulating these texts for their own organizations, and it drives me crazy. And it just validates what Shakyamuni said so many hundreds and thousands of years ago, that we would be in danger at this point in time of losing the teachings altogether. Not because no one would ever hear the name of the Lotus Sutra, but more to the point that the Lotus Sutra would lose its meaning. It was starting in Nichiren's day. Nietzsche railed against, right, the errors in eight schools. Remember that video and that document? I have several videos about that Gosho. All right, you can go to the search engine on this channel. Some people have trouble finding it. It's right. It's in that line in the middle of the homepage of this channel, where it says playlists and videos and about. And it, you may have to scroll that, because it's kind of hidden. Next to the about is a little magnifying glass. And if you click there, you can enter a search term. That search won't search all of YouTube. It'll stay within the bounds of the channel. Super useful, right? And put in eight schools, and you'll get several videos. The reason to bring it up is because Nietzsche was dealing with these other very vaunted schools of Buddhism and demonstrating how they were full of baloney. They were following the teachings of Shakyamuni, but they were adapting those teachings to their political means, to their growth and prosperity, rather than the enlightenment of others. Very simple formula, right? And he would quote from the different sutras to just show them, look, it's not just me, Nietzsche, and going, nee. It's, you're confounding the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. You're no longer practicing. You're doing something else. Well, we're certainly in the midst of that today, aren't we? So, chanting for world peace is another version of this question of how can we interact? We crave this, right? We're human beings. We want to have a sense of intimacy. And as much as I try to provide that in these videos, it's one-sided. I'm hoping that that you feel my sincerity and my gratitude and my want for your depth of practice, your confidence, right? But to put it simply, two things, and I'll be very honest here. I always am, but first of all, there's a technical and financial component to the internet connection. I won't go into everything, but to bring the internet to this building, to have a subscription or a fast enough connection to make it worthwhile to have a person-to-person live situation, which we can do through YouTube. It doesn't have to be Zoom or any of the, which all costs something. Just the costs keep adding up. But we could do it here. I've tried. It's just for short content, you can probably get away with not as much sophistication. But when it comes to these half-hour to one-hour long discourses, especially if we did Gongyo together, oh my goodness, it'd be half a day, right? When connections last that long, you start talking about T1 connections. And those of you who are technical know what I'm talking about. But if you're not, suffice it to say that you need a very robust connection to the internet. Not least of which is the equipment you're using to connect to the internet. Big bucks. It adds up, it adds up, it adds up. I'd want to provide the ability to at least have more than one camera. Otherwise, it would be tough to be involved for that long. To interlocute, to answer, not just seeing in an email feed or a message feed and respond, but to actually have a live connection, it's a huge technical and financial I don't want to say burden, but you know, money is a burden, isn't it? Anyway, so there's that. That's a very big factor, and it's kept me at bay. Secondly, this works pretty well. But off of that, as a person, I myself, the way my partially autistic mind works is, and if you've watched for any length of time, you know how I kind of ricochet rabbit in my head. It seems like I might be going off this way or that way, but I always circle back around and tie things up. That's almost impossible for me to hold in a conversation, let alone with many people. So then it becomes, what's my strategy? How do I make that value-creating content, right? And so there's that difficulty right off the bat. And then I think, you know, Buddhism, as you've often heard me say, is a self-motivated practice. It really is a personal self-enlightenment program. And as much as we'd like to put others in positions of responsibility to do that with us, for us, it's kind of a couched way of hiding from our own effort. Why does this caller always do this to me? Ring, ping, ping. So what I'm saying in effect is, it's a good thing that you have to research on your own. It's a good thing that you don't get every answer answered for you. You have to find your own answers. Those are called insights. That's the only way you're going to grow in your practice, is by you figuring it out. I try to give you as much food, right, for that research, for you to succeed. But I can't answer for your experience of life. It's what I started this video talking about. We hear things and we say things that to us seem abundantly clear, but they're all going through the filters of our eighth consciousness, aren't they? Our karmic freight train. And so only you can delve into your karmic freight train and influence, modify, right? I can't do that. No one can do that. That's why no one can. Here's Buddhism. Here's Buddha. Here's enlightenment. Chew on that. No one can do that. No matter how crafty they might be with their words, no one can offer you Buddha-ness. All we can do is facilitate you discovering it, awakening it for yourself. And so I keep coming back to this format, that it's instructive, but it also leaves the burden with you. You can't offload it to me. Well, I was practicing Buddhism for a while, and I had this teacher, and then, I don't know, she didn't have the right words for me, so I kind of blew it off, and now I'm doing this. See, that's samsara at its worst. Buddhism is all about you. Yeah, finally, something that's all about you. Don't take that negatively. It's wonderful. That's the amazing enlightenment of Shakyamuni. No one's controlling you. No mystical force. No good teacher, bad teacher. No good karma, bad karma. It's yours. It's what you've got. Work with it. See all the potential you can extract from it. Make the best possible iteration of yourself moment to moment to moment to moment to moment. And continue on that path. That's Buddhism, right? So, to get back to the question, I've talked about this, and it's in the book. It's in the book. I'm going to start saying that all the time now. Our practice of self-enlightenment is the practice of world peace. Please be confident in that. Because as you cleanse, if you will, your eighth consciousness, and you wrap yourself, all your eight consciousnesses, in the ninth consciousness of Buddha-ness, you not only, and here's the amazing thing about it, are you enlightening yourself, But your environment, which you're not separate from, your environment, your siblings, your children, your parents, your workmates, people you travel on the train or bus with, or go amongst shopping centers with, without even knowing or realizing it, are being touched by your enlightenment. They are. They are all the time. Right? That's a double-edged sword. Not only are you influencing everything around you, but now, knowing that, you have to be a little bit more conscious of what it is you're doing. With that in mind, are you being a good example? Are you slipping? Ouch! That's rough. That self-surveillance thing, yeah? But the more you chant, the more naturally it just occurs. You don't have to work so hard at it. You think before you speak. Not an easy one for me, I can tell you. So, the other part of that I want to say is that I'm chanting all the time. Not every single second of the day, but believe me, there's a lot of thought going on in my head about this is all I think about. And randomly throughout the day, I'm chanting. I may not be in front of a mandala, but I'm opening up my Gohonzon mind as often as I can. Thankfully, I have enough challenges in my life that I'm brought back to it constantly. So to say that we need to get together to chant, well, it's happening. No doubt, whatever time of the day, whatever place on the globe you may be living, when you chant, we're probably chanting together. And even if we're not, we are each other's environment. So yeah, if you watch that video, Presence at the Butsudan, remember the emulation, the thought of being in the ceremony in the sky? Well, that's you and I. We're all connected through this fabulous engine of life, momentum. We're all in it at the same approximate time. So yeah, we're already doing it. So please have confidence in that. We are chanting together for world peace. All right. Next topic. I haven't skipped any frames. Oh, this free will thing. This comes up from time to time. There's a lot of philosophy academics out there. And this is something I'll say about science in general, because you've heard me say it, Buddhism is more akin to science than it is, it's certainly not a religion. This is so far from religion. Religion requires belief in unsubstantiated things. And Buddhism, though it may appear that way to the initiate, Buddhism is based on our experience. That's our proof. We are witnesses. And our opening of our Buddha mind is all about being a conscientious, aware witness. To what? To our experience. That's Dharma. Dharma is experience. It's sometimes said that Dharma is teaching, but it isn't. The teaching is all about the Dharma. To understand, to achieve, to get to the experience. Right? So when we instantiate the Dharma body of Buddha-ness, we achieve the experience of enlightenment. That's all that is. So, science and scientists, and it wasn't always like this, but certainly in the recent century, so many advances have been made in material science and chemistry and biology and the physicalness of everything in the universe, right? We're going out to an asteroid. It's going to take 9 years to get to it just to see if it has metals we can use materials. It's amazing the lengths that science has gone through and still going through to investigate the physical universe. Right? Even to the definition of the word particle that we use. Even knowing that a particle is not, you know, when you first hear the word particle, you think a thing. You think like a marble, right? Only incredibly small. Or like sand, particles of sand, yeah? But when you finally get down to the nitty-gritty, particles are assemblages of different expressions of energy. What? Yeah. Yeah, nothing stands still. What's an atom made of? Protons, neutrons, electrons, yeah? But there's also positive and negative electrons. There's electrons, the ionization of atoms where electrons are lost or gained. And they're not things. They are not things. They appear as things. The mathematics likes to treat them as things so we can track their movement. But they're just fields of energy, types, combinations of energy. There's no thing there. What there is formation to form, formation to form. Moment to moment is formation instantiating form right into formation again in a form. Right? The line of time we experience is actually little points, one after another. Moment to moment to moment to moment. Cycle of birth and death and rebirth and death, rebirth and death, rebirth and death. And between each moment is influence. That's the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment. All of this is in the book, right? Which I'm really proud of it. After 40-some years of practice, I think it's probably the most useful book that I've created is Buddhism Reference. There's Buddhism dictionaries, there's the encyclopedias online and stuff, but they are all influenced by early teachings, or they try to encapsulate all of the teachings, and they just muddy the waters. They start to sound mystical and magical. It's like, no. That's not what Buddhism is about. So this book, this reference, is firmly rooted in Lotus Sutra Buddhism. Certainly with Nichiren's guidance, yes? He's our mentor. I'm doing my best to emulate him as he requests us to do. So free will. If your entire picture of the universe, scientifically, is material, then you will make statements like, well, your chemistry, your biology, the neurons in your brain, the tendencies that are built into you, you have no choice in that. You have an illusion of choice, but you're just selecting from a vast menu in your mind, in your brain. You don't have free will, right? That's the argument. But guess what, folks? We know, you and I, we're not made of marbles. We're not made of physical things. We have an experience of the physical thing. That's the very thing we're disconnecting from with our practice. Right? That appearance of physicality is the samsaric attachment, clinging. That's the illusion. Our self exists very, very ephemerally, in other words, as an experience in the mind, moment to moment to moment. Here I am, here I am, here I am, here I am. I'm no longer there. That's not me. Stop hanging on to it. Enlightenment is being in this moment as it leaves and into the next. That's where you and I are. We're never there. We're always moving. Everything in the universe is moving. Because we're energy. energy manifesting. Right? Look up moment in Buddhism reference. That blew my mind. When I first found that Planck constant and all of the zeros. Oh my. When I first heard about the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment, I thought, well, 3,000 isn't that much. Oh my. Right? When you say you eat three meals a day, you go, well, so what? I eat four meals a day, right? But if I said to you, you eat those four meals in the next 5 minutes, you go, are you nuts? Right? Right? If I told you to eat those three meals instead of a day, you have 3.5 seconds to eat three meals. I'll give you a little over a second per meal. And it has to be a full meal. Well, you just walk away. He's an idiot, right? So it's not the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment that's impressive. It's that a single thought moment is so fast, so brief. Talk about momentum. It's unfathomable. There we are again. The unfathomable nature of the truth, right? The wisdom, the insight of a Buddha can only be experienced with another Buddha. What does that mean? If you ain't chanting, if you are not invoking that part of your mind, then all of this blah, 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 means nothing to you. That's why the first thing we do when somebody shows interest, when somebody's curious, when somebody just wants to know what the hell is Buddhism, chant first. Chant with them first. Because that's the only way to knock on that Gohonzon mind door, to get it to crack open a little bit, so that your words aren't just pablum, meaningless drivel, but that they have a chance to connect with what's already known. We're already innately Buddha, aren't we? But it's asleep. It's covered with the comforter and blankets and sheets of samsara. We need to pull back all of those covers. You know, hi, Buddha. Time to wake up. So yeah, there's free will. Because why? Because we can invoke our Buddha-ness. Because we can influence 3,000 realms in every single thought moment. That entire teaching comes from Shakyamuni saying, your mind is at your disposal. This was the key component of his shifting of the definition of the word karma. Before him, karma was something you were handed and you had no choice. Right? Words like destiny, right? This is what you're going to do. Succeed or fail, it's on you. You have no choice. Well, that's where this you have no free will comes from. It's ignorant. And it's painful that such intellectual study and individuals are so mired in that limitation. But that's the world we live in, yeah? So yeah, don't let anyone tell you you have no free will. I'm not saying it's easy, but talk to any successful athlete and they'll tell you about visualizations, about mantras, about every form of self-training of the mind that they use to succeed. And then tell me there's no free will. Now, the person who says no free will will say, yeah, they succeed, but that's already built into, they've just made a choice to focus on those abilities. Okay, Mr. Material, go ahead. You can line up all your dominoes and make it say that, but you're totally missing the energy at work, the moment-to-moment instantiation of being. Because what I was being yesterday is no longer what I am being today. I am constantly moving, reinstantiating, cycle of birth and death. They'll just glaze.
That's not in my book.
Oh, okay. Stay there. I'm inviting you, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, to see beyond your nicely physical box of understanding. There's a lot more out there, in there, right? So that's all I'll say about free will. And now I've talked blah, blah, blah way too long. Three questions and it took 45 minutes. Anyway, yeah, so that's why I decided to make a Q&A video, because if this was an introduction to another a video on the Lotus Sutra, I would have lost you a long time ago. So we'll continue with that tomorrow. Today, thank you for listening. I hope I addressed some of your thoughts. Many of you, of course, didn't know I was going to address these questions, but all of us think about these things. Yeah. They're annoying little voices in the back of our head sometimes. So I think it's good to do these Q&As once in a while. And if you have thoughts for another, use the comments or email me, tlksylvain@gmail.com. Yeah. In the meantime, be kind to yourself. Take care of your health, right? And those around you. You guys are incredibly important to me. And I value your practice. Amazing. Your patronage, just liking and subscribing, is a bodhisattva act. It helps propagate this resource and grow the sangha. And those of you who can support financially, wow. A really amazing bodhisattva effort. I'm grateful. I am proud of you. I want to celebrate you. So thank you. Thank you for being a part of this sangha. Yeah? All right. I can say no more. So I will see you in the next one. All right, bye for now.